Welcome back, mead people.
In this episode, we've got a visit from an old friend, catch up on his new role over at the local meadery Lost Cause.
We go over some ways that the mead world has evolved since Golden Coast started.
And we discuss our seasonal release, a flavor that works both chilled and warmed, or mulled, to 120 degrees Fahrenheit called That Time of Year.
All right. Thanks for being here. Let's dive in.
We live? We hot?
Hey, Brando.
Hey, Frank.
Good to hear your voice, man.
Good to hear your voice.
Oh, yeah. We got Kendra here. You're not the host anymore, Brando.
Oh, man.
Kendra's the host.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Cheers. Cheers.
Yeah, in the meat industry, we like to keep our friends. We're all working on that, you know. What are we drinking today, team?
That's a nice
one. That's a nice mead. Well, we're calling it That Time of Year.
That Time of Year.
It is a spiced sweet mead made with lemon, cinnamon, cloves, and ginger. And we have a whole tasting poem on it.
Tasting poem, you say?
Yeah, well, you know, remember you used to work here and we'd do these tasting panels and you showed up while we were doing it? And
that's true.
And it becomes these tasting notes. The aroma is bright cinnamon harvest, with your first sip being sweet and buttery holiday spice, followed by a multi-layered, rewarding mouth texture and warm, comforted finish, leaving you with a festive experience. When Brandon showed up, he was like, it's like being at a Christmas bonfire with all your friends and family. And we're like, oh, that's pretty great. And then he came up with the name, That Time of Year.
And I mean, it just is. Everything about it, smell and taste, is that time of year.
Yeah, it's very enjoyable.
It's very, yeah, that time of year, I guess.
We recorded a few. So we do the 6S. For those of you that don't know, we do the 6S method where we work through all the meads that we produce to come up with these tasting notes to help the consumer understand what they're getting into when they drink and share our mead. And the 6S is our sight, right? How it looks, sniff, how it smells, sip, how it feels when it first hits your lips, swish, how it feels when you swish it all around and aerate it and engage the taste buds that are under your tongue and on the inside of your lips and on your cheeks and on the roof of your mouth, because you have taste buds all over, not just on your tongue. And then swallow, your brain turns off the part of your brain that's scanning whether the thing in your mouth is going to kill you or not once you decide to swallow. And then that opens up more flavors, more experience. And then savor, how do you feel after you drink it? So those poems are to the tasting notes poems are to introduce the drinker to that experience.
And you can also listen to a full episode about it.
Yes, there is a full episode. Last season, right? From season one. Yeah. So today we're going to talk a little bit. Are we going to talk more about mold? That time of year?
Yeah, that time of year. Because unlike most of our other meads, or dare I say all, this is a mead that was actually created to be enjoyed chilled or warmed. So we're very known for our chilled meads, particularly always having them cold, not just room temp. But that time of year is really wonderful, warmed up to about 120 degrees Fahrenheit. We recommend either warming up water and putting your bottle in that, or your glass of mead in that, or a double boiler method, instead of directly warming the mead on the stove. I think it would be the easiest and safest way.
Yeah. Don't want to scorch your meat.
Yeah, definitely don't want to scorch it.
Microwave's okay? Not okay?
For the purists among us, never! But if you're in a pinch and you need to get some hot meat warmed up quick, it's been done before.
Just monitor it closely.
And yeah, I mean, apparently it's just vibrations going between the water molecules, but what does that do to all the other delicate magic present in the mead?
Yeah, microwaves have a great vibe.
They definitely have a vibe.
it's a hot vibe. Okay, so what might we pair this with since we've been talking about pairing meads?
Oh my gosh. It's, you know, This would definitely, I'm actually looking forward to hearing what your preferences are for pairing this with food. But when I tasted this, I imagined myself drinking it out of like a thermos and being outside somewhere, like watching a holiday parade, sitting at like a bonfire. So I would personally love to enjoy it on its own. Yeah. I think it's got so many beautiful complexities that would be best enjoyed on their own. However, the spices would be definitely super complementary to lots of other food.
Totally. Like, I mean, a shortbread cookie, right? Oh. Right? Just the spicy notes. And there is a buttery sweetness in that mint palate. So then you take a bite of that buttery cookie and you take a sip of this and it just like rolls over in your mouth over and over.
See, I'm more thinking like just straight up Thanksgiving.
Yeah, like, it's Thanksgiving dinner, Christmas
turkey,
dinner.
Like this
mashed potatoes. Great
to like sip along with like classic Thanksgiving dinner.
Totally. I could see this with all the traditional Thanksgiving food.
Yeah. And on like the bonfire side of things, I think this would be great with a s'more. I think it's kind of that contrast compliment you guys are talking about on the last episode is what I haven't done it yet, so I don't know if it actually works, but that's where my mind is.
Yeah. The sweetness... Yeah, I think that could totally work, and I want to give it a try. And then, like, if you're looking for something kind of off the beaten path to pair it with, like if you were doing duck that had some spice to it, like, you know, like a Chinese kind of Peking duck kind of style, or that fatty sweetness of duck with some spice, and then this sweetness and this spice could work together.
Yeah. I could also see this paired really well, chilled or warmed, with sort of like your classic charcuterie board accoutrements.
Yeah, going towards like a holiday, like persimmons and like those kind of...
Some really fun like cured salami and meats and...
Dried fruits.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I could see that. I could also...
We're just like, honestly, fantasizing right now. What doesn't this go with?
I would say like it wouldn't go with... pho, you know, like pho soup, right? Mm-hmm. Like those bright green kind of flavors and like onioniness, like it wouldn't work in like the cilantro category.
Yeah.
That wouldn't fit with this.
That's fair. I can see that. I also, my mind goes to like heating it up and throwing like a tea bag in it for like a...
Blasphemy! It's perfect as it is now. I'm kidding. Sorry. For what? For like a warm chai? Like a chai mead?
Yeah, chai or a tea cocktail.
Like black tea? You would add black tea
to
it?
Yeah, like Earl Grey would be good with it, in my opinion.
A hot toddy.
Yeah.
But instead of whiskey, it's our that time of year mead. Oh,
that is a thing that we wanted to talk about a little bit later about. Yeah, so we're having a lot of fun. And we wanted to talk about a lot of things today, including Brandon leaving, but that's okay. We're not sad about it. We're happy because it means the meat industry is a real thing, that like people can work at one meadery. And he was only working part-time, and he's a dad with kids and a wife who's working, and he wanted to have a full-time job, and we couldn't give him one.
In mead.
In mead, that's right. And Las Cas got him, and they're really lucky to have him, and we're stoked for them because Brandon's going to do great things over there. But it means that the mead industry is large enough to support intermead talent transfers, which is like a huge step for an industry. So we were going to talk about 13 years of mead in San Diego County, with Golden Coast Mead being the first one, and the change that we've seen occur both in our local industry and then nationally, and how you, the listener, can get tapped into that national scene and what it has to offer you. And if you're international, which apparently we have dozens of people who are all over the world listening to this podcast, which is pretty cool.
Hi.
Yeah. And you sent some questions. Switzerland, thank you. Australia, thank you. And we're trying to roll all those up into a question and answer episode, but that's in progress. So Brandon is here and he's working at Las Cas, and we wanted to talk about the transformation that continues to occur in the mead industry. And I think one of the things that I've seen that aligns with this and that question of, you know, what pairs with this, what doesn't pair with it, how do you treat it afterwards? One of the things I love about mead is just what an open, creative category it is.
Yeah.
And so if someone wants to take a great mead and warm it up and then add tea to it, sweet, that's their deal. Like, it is not a cloistered, controlled craft that some things have become. It is instead like, well, what do you imagine doing? Can you do it well? Can you find enough people who appreciate it? And then can you do it enough to support a business doing it?
Yeah. And I definitely think, like, I think what's interesting is, like, 13 years ago, he started GCM. And, like, today, there's so much more than there was 13 years ago.
And there's some people who are still are, like, huge fans who were drinking our mead back then. And we're so grateful to you all for drinking our mead and knowing who we are. And to be on this journey with people, Dwayne Ackley, like this huge Viking guy who showed up at our first bottle event at Bottlecraft in Little Italy. And like, he's still buying mead from us and still see each other every now and then. And I don't know. It's like, we obviously, yes, Golden Coast Mead made the mead, but you guys drank the mead and helped this mead industry expand to the point. Sorry, I interrupted you, Brianna.
No, you're good. I think where the question I have for you is, like, if you think back to 2010 mm-hmm. in mead mm-hmm. and you think of, like, today in mead, like, I know a lot has changed.
Yeah.
But for you day to day, like, what do you see the most in your face? Does it seem the same to you?
Oh my gosh, no.
Or like, what is so it evolved. That you see yeah. that like, you feel like, oh, wow, like it's actually progressed from here to here, and like it's yeah. really cool to see this or that. What's your experience like in that?
Thanks. And so the first thing that comes to mind is how the problems that we work on here, and by problems, it's not like they're bad problems, just, you know, the opportunities, the challenges, the things we work on here is really about growing the industry, not about establishing a foothold.
Okay.
Like our first 5 years, we're like, how are we going to get into people's awareness? And like, what is mead was a lot of the question that we were answering a lot of the time.
We have a solid answer for that.
We do.
Alcohol made for
yeah, man. And literally, like UC Davis in our second gathering there. Yeah, a lot of syllables.
a lot of syllables. There we go.
Our second meeting at UC Davis, the first one was the first mead making course. And then the second one was this kind of consultant driven think tank where Amina at the Honey and Pollination Center at UC Davis, she's a founder and director. She's since retired, but she's working at Z Specialty Food, the honey supplier that her family has owned for a long time, since the 70s. She gathered wine executives, mead entrepreneurs, wine business professors, some people like Chrissy Zarapur, who wrote the book on mead tasting and food pairing. All of these, you know, kind of thought leaders, and we got to participate in that. And she asked that question, like, what is mead? What is your definition of mead? And we workshopped that, and we didn't come out with like a conclusion because, you know, some of the people at the workshop were committed to their definition, but that alcohol made from honey, you know, like, boom, that was the first time that I think we shared that in a collective way. And then people started spreading that around the country.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And like in 2010, did you envision you ever being a part of a conversation like that?
I knew that I loved mead and I wondered why I couldn't buy it regularly. And when I did buy it, it didn't make me excited the way that it did when my grandpa gave me his last bottle of mead. And then I started making it and seeing the way that it could just light up a room. And I was like, oh, if we shared this with the whole world. I mean, I've told this story a couple of times, but one piece that I kind of hold back because it's like so enthusiastically innocent is that when I was 18 with my girlfriend at the time, who's now my wife, she was 19, and like it's our first summer together. We've met like a couple weeks prior. She's gonna go study abroad in France, and we have like 6 days together in Berkeley. And I move into my first co-op, which I end up living in for the next 3 years. It becomes like home for me. And it's a Julia Morgan mansion. And it's on Bancroft Steps, which are like, that's our address, Bancroft Steps, because Bancroft ends, and then there's these steps, and then there's the stadium.
Wow.
And we overlook from the porch the bay with the Golden Gate. Like, we see half the Golden Gate and then the whole South Bay from our porch. And like, you know, we're going on hikes, we're playing Frisbee. It's like just the joy of being young people, and we're totally in love. And we like hold hands and take the steps two at a time. And it's like, if we could bottle this feeling and share it with the world, we would like help the world heal and help solve so many problems. And then the last night we're together, we open this epic bottle of mead that my grandfather has saved for like ever in his attic of his garage. And it is drinking sunlight. And it is this golden drink that tastes like the golden hour. And I am just overwhelmed. And so when we were first starting out, like that was the desire. And what needed to get done to make that happen was unknown. But going up to UC Davis to have a marketing conference discussion, you know, about how we simplify all of that magic into four words became part of it.
Yeah.
To bring it back to those four words, now with the creation of the Mead Institute, is that something that we now have an industry like definition of what we are considering mead? Are we at that point yet?
So we have a working definition at the Mead Institute that mead is alcohol fermented from 50% or more honey.
Not 51.
51 is more than 50. We're like, there's a pinned down problem that's going on inside the Mead Institute at the moment. But
50.1?
Right? Like, does it need to be 51? Does it need to be 50.1? Yeah.
You know, in a burgeoning industry, it's funny that it's the oldest alcohol, but one of the newest alcohol industries. So, right. It's like these rules and guidelines still have to be put in place, but we're still left with a lot of room for exploration. You know, Brando talking about adding a tea bag, and, you know, me saying it's almost like a hot toddy. I actually love telling people that there are no rules when it comes to mead. And I've had lots of people talk about wanting to do a mead cocktail of some kind. I love suggesting the dry as your champagne replacement for a mead mosa. So I think there's a lot of like exploration to be done in, you know, mead as, not as a spirit, but, you know, as a mixer too.
Yeah, as a craft.
And a little shout out to Lost Cause. We do have mead cocktails.
There we go.
I made a mead cocktail.
That's a huge big step for it, for sure.
On Halloween, it was really yummy. It was a sweet mead. From a meadery in Massachusetts, Green River Ambrosia. They're part of the Artisan Beverage Collective now out there. Super cool group of folks. But sweet, hyper-local honey-based mead with about, I think I did about 2 ounces of that, 12%, and then 1.5 ounces of port, 10-year tawny port, and then 1 ounce of bourbon, and then finish it, you know, on ice in a tall 12-ounce glass, and then finish it off with tonic. And these things just went down so fast. And for Halloween, made for a very giddy evening. Yeah, I was like, oh, this is easy. Like, 5 kids, costumes, my mom, my sister, my wife, my sister's boyfriend. Like, I can deal with this. This is cool. This is easy. Who wants another one?
Yeah, with a glass of this in my hand, I got it.
Good.
So I love the idea of there being like, you know, some official quote unquote rules, guidelines to what mead is in the mead industry, but still having all of that room for like creativity and exploration. And, you know, I think the mead cocktail realm is going to be a huge part of the future of mead.
Yeah. And I always like to call it a framework. I think like a framework to work within is super important. And I think the Mead Institute is trying to do that as best they can, create the framework for what mead
That's rad.
Yeah. The foundation, you can build off that from whatever, but we need that collective foundation. If we can agree on what mead is, then we can grow exponentially in any direction from there.
Putting on that Mead Institute hat and just, if there is one rule, right, it's that mead needs to be made from 50% or more honey.
Yes.
Right. And then the creativity is unbound, right? But if it's made from less than 50% honey, then it's like an other thing that honey has been added to.
Totally.
Right? So I think if there's one rule, it's that. And then take it from there.
Absolutely. Can I ask a very intermediate question?
Intermediate.
Beginner's question, rather.
Beginner?
If you're not using, and this is coming from such a almost a snooty place because Golden Coast Mead only uses honey, what other fermentable sugars are people using? Just white sugar or like maple syrup? Or
when I went out to Scotland and talked to a professional mead maker there, he was like, yeah, it's pretty disillusioning out here because people start making mead and they realize the economics are tough and factor in the economics of distribution. And pretty soon, when they hit a certain volume, they're putting sugar in there, and you don't know how much honey is in there.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, that is sad.
And with honey being a fraudulent food as it is, you know, it can be really difficult. So I like that at least being, hey, if we're going to stick to one mead rule, I like it to be.
Yeah, that's like the foundational rule. And then, you know, the framework, Brandon, that's, you worked in coffee. You watched it grow from like niche specialty coffee to like, I think it's the specialty coffee industry.
Oh, I don't have a number, but
hundreds of millions.
Sure. It's still much smaller than like
bulk coffee,
but I mean, we've made a dent in the last 20 years, I would say.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think most people know specialty
coffee. Yeah. So what would you say the framework that helps specialty coffee evolve was, like, these standards of quality and definitions? That's one of them. What about like co-opetition? Is there any kind of standard within the specialty coffee world around like how you treat your co-opetition?
No, it's actually, I feel like that's still evolving, and there's still no. The closest thing in my mind I can come to when it comes to like that one rule mead has was, I feel like it was a strong backlash against the second wave, which was like a really dark roasted coffee. Mm. So I feel like one of the ways early on that specialty coffee really defined itself was lighter roasted coffee.
Mm.
And like that was something where like if you were calling yourself specialty, you had only light roasted coffee instead of like dark roasted coffee. That's not true today. I feel like the more evolved the industry gets, the more specialty shops have some medium and darker roast. But I feel like that's the biggest thing I can compare to that. But ultimately, I feel like, and another thing that comes to mind too, I guess, with specialty coffee is like going to the source of the green coffee was super important, like figuring out where the green was coming from, and like meeting the farmers, trying to share equity with farmers and everyone along the chain was a really big intention from some early green coffee buyers that I feel like really defined like varietal coffees and special coffees that are like micro lots, stuff like that is what came out of that. So it was like those two things hand in hand, and not everyone did those things perfectly. To this day, not everyone still does those things perfectly, and
everyone, but it was a huge step.
Yeah, it was a step forward, and like it was the intention of trying to find the best coffee and then not only find it but roast it and serve it the best way, instead of just using it as a commodity, burning it, and making as much as you can off of it, I guess.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Making value out of subtlety.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it's an imperfect industry still, but those were the big steps that I feel like Third Wave took to carve out the specialty niche and grow it.
I feel like I can see the future of mead following in a lot of those same footsteps where we just don't have the focus, attention, money, interest, whatever, to go deep into all those realms yet. But I can totally see the future of mead being like, you know, this style of mead is made from honey from this corner of the world, and it's a well-established, you know, beehive that's, you know, all these accredited organic places. Like, I could see the future of mead being the same thing with this honey, where you have these super specialty areas of, like, organic honey coming from these reputable places.
Yeah, and I think, like, the turning away from, like, just big commercial batch honey too.
Yeah.
The blended down, homogenized honey, and instead talking about specialty honeys
turning into specialty. Mm-hmm. And an interesting I've seen over the past 20 so years in specialty too is, like, it come full circle almost, where at first there was a lot of focus on, like, light roasted single origin. And now I see a lot of people getting back into blending coffee, but, like, blending good coffee, mm-hmm. and being super intentional with it, and, like, creating coffee with, like, blended coffee and creating something better than maybe a single origin has to offer, or, like, piecing together different single origins intentionally instead of, like, throwing 8 to 10
whatevers
to hit your quota and make it work.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? So it's kind of, like, weird to, like, blends were a super bad thing, mm-hmm. but now it's kind of like, no, people are getting cool.
Intentional,
and it's, like, working.
Which I would say is, it kind of almost sounds like our current honey supplier.
Don't tell too much.
I won't say too much,
it kind of reminds
me of that.
So one of the things that's evolved in the meat industry over the last 13 years is, like, sourcing honey and making a consistent product was so difficult. And obviously, like, we're the most focused on our product of a lot of people. Our customers also, who get to know us, they start to pick up on the difference that honey can create in a beverage. And, like, for a long time, we're like, it's a craft beverage. There's going to be variations on a theme. But sometimes we get honey from one supplier, make an awesome batch of mead, get more honey from that same supplier. The honey tasted a little different, but we're like, well, we got a recipe. Let's see. Hopefully it works. And then we get the mead out the backside and it's totally different. And we're like, oh, man. And we have to, like, change the label and market it totally differently. And all the customers are like, hey, what about that product that I was expecting? We're like, it's not available. And they're like, okay, call us when you're reliable.
And I think some of that goes to the totally different variations that you have in making mead versus vodka. Like, the variations on potatoes from year to year is not going to be the variation of honey.
At all.
And so, you know.
Even grapes.
And grains. Yeah. And, like, pretty much anything, any other alcohol.
I mean, grapes can have a lot of variability based off of weather and moisture and when they're harvested and all this stuff. But, like, it's still variations within one organism.
Totally.
Right? The grape.
Yes.
Whereas, like, we're talking about variations within a whole ecosystem, mm-hmm. across time.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I like to bring it back to, I feel like consumers have evolved too.
Yes.
To the point where it's kind of like, I don't know if I'm in my own little bubble here, but I think most people, like.
You do work at One Meadery after work at another meadery.
But I think ultimately, I think what I'm trying to get at is, like, maybe 50 years ago, all the consumers were, if they didn't get the same exact product, that was, like, a bad thing almost.
Yeah, in the 50s, like, cookie cutter mass production.
Yeah. Yeah, and it was expected, like, if this didn't taste the exact same, something's off. And I feel like nowadays, I feel like there's a lot more education in agriculture, and at least in coffee and in mead, from my understanding, that, like, hey, batches vary. And it's like, that's part of the beauty of coffee, and that's part of the beauty of mead. And, like,
of life.
Yeah.
Things change.
Nothing's going to ever be the same.
Yeah.
And, like, you got to pivot and adapt and evolve. And that comes with food and what you drink, too. And, like, it's just like
we I hear Ken Tram in my mind. No, it's good. I don't want to cut you off because I think you got a salient point.
But it's just like there can be beauty in something tasting a little different.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And like
agreed.
I think that is something important too to be noted here is like we aren't in the 50s and 60s anymore. We are in 2023 and we have consumers who realize that.
And I'd rather show off those differences that occurred naturally than try to shove everything back into the same mold that it doesn't fit in.
Okay, we're going to pause there, and Kendra is going to let you know what is going on at Golden Coast Mead.
Hey, friends. First up for our international audience, please be sure you like, follow, subscribe, share, all of those amazing things that really do help Golden Coast Mead and your local meadery that you love. And for our local friends and fans here in San Diego, we've got a couple great holiday markets coming up close by. On December 2nd and 3rd, Makers Arcade will be putting on an amazing showcase of local artisans on December 2nd and 3rd. Then on December 9th, the Makers Arcade once again is putting on a huge showcase up in Oceanside. You don't want to miss these events. There is something for the entire family.
Hey, mead lovers. Did you know there's an easy way to save with the Mead Club? With monthly and quarterly options and no minimum sign-up period, what have you got to lose? Mead Club members get our latest small batch and seasonal flavors automatically shipped to their front door. Monthly membership includes an additional 15% off bottle purchases made outside the club and access to our private reserves. Be the first to receive exciting new mead flavors and start saving today. Visit www.goldencoastmead.com/shop to sign up now.
All right. Now you know how you can support Golden Coast Mead and get Golden Coast Mead in your life a little bit more. Now let's go back to the episode. Cheers.
All right. We're back from our break. And the energy is still pumped about varietal differences.
What does Ken Tram say?
Yeah, so Ken Tram, he is a brilliant human who has spent a lot of his time thinking about how to make great mead. And he's like primarily sourcing orange blossom honey now for his meads because it's like you're going to get this baseline of beautiful floral citrus, you know, complexity, and then he's going to layer all of these beautiful things on top.
And his mead is called Tram's?
Tram's mead, yep.
Sorry for giving away your secret, Ken.
I mean, he's pretty public about that. No, that orange blossom is the base of that. But like Billy at Las Cas and us, you know, Billy experiments with a lot of different kinds of honey, and he makes relatively smaller batches when he does it. And sometimes he makes things that are just phenomenal. And then there's sometimes where there's like a yeast honey incompatibility and all of his technical skills results in something that's like, that wasn't the way that I expected it to taste, you know, but that doesn't mean that it's bad. It's just different and interesting, maybe weird, but that can be said about our meads a lot of the time too. Like we make things that we didn't intend to make and we're like, oh, that's interesting. Yeah, I think it's pretty good.
Sour.
Yeah, exactly. That's the story of our flagship product, the sour. But our sour has gotten so much more consistent since we've started sourcing honey and blending that honey, which some people think is like total no-no. But we are pretty comfortable that we're going to be able to increase our volume and maintain a certain amount of consistency. There might be batch-to-batch variation, but it's not going to be like, oh, we were playing a piano and now we're playing an organ. You know, like, yes, they have, you know, like that could be how different our meads were sometimes. It's like, I see that they are both golden and have honey aromas, but tasting them, it's like the difference between drinking a champagne and drinking a craft beer. Like,
yeah,
there. And that's just the honey that made that difference. So we want to be able to meet our customer where they're at, right? They're expecting a certain thing. And we want to be able to produce more of it and still deliver that thing that they're expecting.
And going back to 2010 versus 2023,
yeah,
like that's a step forward industry wise, where you aren't just trying to like shoo your way into the alcohol industry and get anyone to drink it. It's kind of like, okay, mead exists now, and how can we bring a more consistent, high quality product to the already existing consumer? That's like a different step.
Yeah, there's an education piece, right? If we hit people too hard, too fast with all the nuance and all the creativity and all the complexity of mead, even if they're an advanced consumer, they can kind of get overwhelmed. But if we kind of, hey, yeah, mead's really cool. There's a bunch of different kinds. You want to try it? Oh, okay. And then like pour them three really different meads and just be like, so this one is a sour and this one's a dry and this one's a sweet. Which one do you like? Right. And then they get to try them. And then if they're really into one, hopefully we can like answer any question they have about it.
Or even these are three sours that taste completely different.
Whoa.
But yeah, I agree. But that's a good example of like a step forward the meat industry has taken. Mm-hmm. And stuff like the Meat Institute and the education classes that are happening weren't happening in 2010, to my knowledge.
Nope.
Like that kind of stuff
changes the game.
But like, did your original vision of like being able to share like happiness in a bottle, do you see the steps that have been taken in the last 13 years and like ever like pat yourself on the back?
Thanks. There's so much work left to be done that I think doing that is, but you got to celebrate wins, right? And when Andrew, our CEO, came on and was like, Frank, you know, there's like 20 meaderies in the world because you helped them, right? I was like, oh, yeah, that's a good point. So there's definitely a celebration there.
I brag on you all the time for that, by the way.
Well, thanks. I mean, so many people have supported and believed in us and helped us achieve that, right? It's not just like the customer that we helped. It's like all of our backers on Kickstarter and all of our crowdfunding start engine backers and the slow money people that have invested and believed in us, and our customers have been super generous with us. So it's like a whole community, right? Like we're all making this thing real. And we should celebrate that more. Golden Coast Mead started October 24th of 2010. So it's kind of like our 13th birthday, you know, just a week, 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
And as a 13-year-old, we've done some cool stuff. Yeah. We've done some cool stuff. And the UC Davis stuff, that is a point of pride and accomplishment that I hope we can continue. Amina's transitioning, or has transitioned out of her position, but Dr. Block, who's the chair of viticulture and oenology at UC Davis, has said that he'd like to continue the program. The Honey and Pollination Center is looking for an executive director right now. So we need like a liaison between us and the university to make that next set of courses happen. But hopefully we can do something really cool. Keep doing something really cool there. And then it's been so cool incubating meaderies. I mean, Billy from Las Casas was an award-winning home brewer, and we met him through QAF, the Quality Ale and Fermentation Fraternity, which is a San Diego homebrewing club. And hit it off talking about mead and drinking some of his great meads. And he was stoked that there was a commercial meadery in San Diego. And he was thinking about starting one. And we were like, well, we like talked about partnering, but realized that it wasn't a good time for either of us. But we invited him up to do a collaboration and kind of learn about using equipment on a larger scale. Mm-hmm. And so we made Billy's Tasty Tincture of Tingly Tongues and Tummies.
Oh, I love that.
Which was the first chocolate chipotle recipe.
Whoa.
Okay. Yeah. And BT5, it was called. That was Joe, our head of production's name for it, which is pretty funny. And we had a ton of fun. And then he went off and started Las Casas, found the spot at Serpentine Spider that would let him do the alternating proprietorship. And we had a little thing called the SoCal Meat Alliance, which kind of So American Mead Makers Association is this national organization, and then there's Mead Institute. And Mead Institute exists to focus on like the quality assurance, quality control, education side, and quality standards. Whereas American Mead Makers Association is kind of like tried to do everything. And Greg, who's the new president, has talked about guiding AMMA towards marketing for the industry, kind of PR for the industry, and marketing PR. Legal advocacy. So like talking a lot to lawmakers about regulations that would help the industry grow. And so that didn't exist in 2010.
And I think the fact that so much of this does exist and these other meteries that we're talking about, and what I was saying about what I love to brag about you is the lack of gatekeeping. I mean, there's so much room in the US and in the world for multiple meteries doing all kinds of amazing things. And I think anyone who's sort of leading the charge in any kind of burgeoning industry could really learn from you in that regard. You don't have to be this, you know, gatekeeper of knowledge and experiences. Like, there's 8 billion of us on this planet. We need more Franks in the world. We need more parade leaders. We need more flowers and sunshine in a bottle. So thank you.
And regenerative.
And regenerative.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Kindred. That's very kind of you. And I feel all embarrassed now.
I just like, you know, you really put your money where your mouth is. It's not just about saying that we're producing this regenerative product. It's like, You've done the hard work to help other people, you know, bust into this regenerative business and just help the industry and the planet even more.
Thanks. Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm just like, I hope you take time at least once a year to like see like the steps like you and the meat industry. Like, I'm not trying to credit you with everything, obviously. I'm just trying to like say, like, even with me personally, you have influenced me and my views of mead and like got me hooked into mead. And like, if people ask Brando, how'd you get into mead? You're going to be the first name that comes to the conversation.
Thanks.
And I'm sure there's a lot of other people out there with like that, where it's kind of like, oh, Frank at Golden Coast. I've met customers actually at Lost Cause who have said that. Like, oh yeah. The first thing I had was with Frank up at, I'm like, oh yeah, I know him. But I guess what I would want for you, and what I find super interesting, is like, you had that mead with your then girlfriend, now wife, and you had this goal of sharing happiness with the world. And I hope you at least see like you have made a dent with that a little bit.
Thanks, man.
And yeah, there's a lot further more we can do.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
like, you have gone a certain length.
Thanks, guys. Yeah, and to think about that future, I'd love to hear your guys' thoughts about what that future looks like and what you hope for the future of Mead. And we'd love to hear the audience, too. Like, you know, people tune in to this podcast from all over the world, and obviously there's a reason for it. Like, everyone just has 24 hours in the day. Maybe some mead drinkers are time travelers. I mean, Merlin was living backwards.
Yeah.
But time dilation is also a thing that I've experienced because of mead.
I don't know. After one bottle, my days feel like 25 hours.
I've had
that's just like
hours with mead that fly by in a moment. And anyways, you guys who are out there listening to this all over the world, we'd love to hear what your thoughts are about the future of mead and where you'd like to see the mead industry grow and go, and the change that you would like to see the mead industry make as it does. And, you know, we'd like you guys to tune into that bigger mead network of the Mead Institute to learn about quality and standards, and AMMA to talk about marketing mead and legal evolution to help make mead as an industry easier and more successful. And then on your local scale, you know, finding your local meaderies and tapping into them and finding the meads that you like that they make and encouraging them and supporting them to develop those styles. Because that's one of the things that beer and wine has that mead doesn't have yet, is like these regional styles. Mm-hmm. And Shram's talked about that, about like maybe we localize styles based off the honey that's available and the you know, one of the things that we love about our sour mead is it's warm in Southern California. We want something cool and refreshing and tart mm-hmm. and alive most of the year. So that guides us towards these 12% ABV, low to no sweetness, tart, refreshing, bubbly meads. And that's maybe not as appropriate in the upper Midwest where it gets freezing cold and you want something thick and sweet and warming. That's one of the things that I would love to see is the regionalization of mead styles based off of local honeys and local climatic environments.
I absolutely see I see that happening, because when we were talking about some of the stuff earlier about around the world, I started thinking about Champagne and how only, you know,
Champagne region
can be Champagne. And I could totally see that for mead in the future, you know, with the increase in more options for organic honey. I could see there being mead specifically made from certain areas, having that like Champagne kind of distinction.
Yeah, like national parks or like, you know.
National park meads? That'd be so cool.
I mean, there's a bit of a ways to go, but we're talking to USDA.
We're thinking big future.
Yeah. Well, Grand Canyon, that might be hard. But Yosemite mead, you know, like that's a thing. And even if you put your bees on the edge of the national park, you know?
Yeah, that'd be so cool.
I don't know. I think one of my main hopes for mead is to not fall into like the siloed trap that I feel like some specialty did, where I feel like some people got so invested into a coffee one way, they kind of became closed-minded to other ways of coffee, and it wasn't just like, oh no, that's just a different way of coffee. It's like, no, that's wrong, and if you do it that way, you are wrong. Not the way to do coffee. And I never liked that, and I would hope for the future as meat grows that even in like the variations of mead that you're talking about, not there to be like, this is the right way to do mead, and everyone else who does it the other way is like doing it wrong. I would hope that the sense of community stays. And the beauty, I think one of the beautiful things about mead is just how many different things you can do with it, and always encouraging that, and that being like one of the highlights of mead rather than like one of the things that is taken away from people who like just like dry meads. So everything in the conversation is like, well, if you don't have dry, I'm not going to try you.
Yeah.
Or you just have sweet meads, so I don't like sweet meads. It's kind of like, well, as a meadery, you can make dry and sweet. You can do anything. And like, maybe you focus on one more than the other, or maybe that, but it's kind of like being able to, as a community, appreciate mead in all its variations, I think is something I want to see continue as it grows. Yes.
Beautiful. That's great. I might try to simplify that to preserving mead's creativity, giving space for regional and varietal categories to develop, but always thinking of mead as this wonderful, expressive craft that can do things that no other craft can touch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And yeah, just embracing that variation while also digging into the nitty gritty and making certain regional things as best they can be.
Phew! Man. okay, so We've talked about a lot here, and what do we do now, team? I think we might introduce some segments.
Yes.
Yeah.
I would just selfishly like to say thank you guys for having me on.
Thanks, Amanda.
And I've always appreciated doing the podcast with you, Frank. And I'm super happy you're taking over for me, Kendra.
Thanks, Brando.
And I think you're gonna be great, and like I fully support it.
Thanks so much.
I'm just all very grateful.
Collaboration right there. Co-opetition.
Co-opetition.
I think the key rule to co-opetition is be cool and treat other people the way you would want to be treated.
Stay human.
Some people say don't be a dick. But, you know, we're all learning and growing. So I think we've got these segments that we want to roll out, and we don't need to talk about them. We're just going to do it, right? We're gonna edit those things so that the segments fill in right at the right time. But we had a couple ideas. We had poetry. We had choose your own adventure. We had stand-up.
Skits, yes.
Skits and stand-up. And then we have a bit of a band here at Golden Coast Mead. Brandon, our head of production, is like an incredible guitarist. And then Marcos jams on all kinds of instruments very well. I play the flute.
I could mess around with like a tambourine probably.
Yeah, so I think we might need to record, have a little jam sesh, and then
I still have the audio that you guys recorded.
I think more will be merrier. I think we get a few more voices in the mix, a few more talents on the table, and then some mead flowing, and take it from there. So look for those segments coming up in this and future episodes.
Boom.
Anything else? Oh, a special discount code or some kind of special offer for you listeners of the podcast.
Yeah.
Do you want to stay tuned to that too?
Wow.
Anything else?
Look at you guys go.
You wanted to say something?
I just missed my B jokes at the end.
Ah. He would just read off B jokes.
Yeah.
I wonder if the audience misses them.
I mean, I have a non-B joke for you. Do you want it?
Sure.
Do you know the difference between wallpaper and toilet paper?
Wallpaper and toilet paper. I can't glue one to the wall.
One sticks where you want it to?
No. You're supposed to not know the difference.
No, I don't know the
difference. You know the difference? Ew.
Ew. That was a good one.
You can try that on your 4-year-old.
Yeah. She's very into potty jokes.
Oh, she'll love it then.
All right. Thank you all. That was fun. Uh oh. Wait, that's bad luck. Cheers, friends.
Kanpai.
Sail.
All right. We did it.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Thanks for joining us. If you liked the parts about mead and food pairing, tune into our next episode where we interview Chrissy Mannion-Zarapour herself.
Cheers. And thank you for listening to the Regenerative Mead podcast. If there's anything you'd like us to go over in the podcast, please email us at podcast@goldencoastmead.com. Until then, drink the change you want to see in the world. Cheers.
Cheers.